All right, we are back with a new episode of Sixers Talk. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. Joining me, as always, on Mondays, Mr. Paul Hudrick. Still dealing with having to be a new parent. Paul, how much have you slept overall over the last week or so?
So admittedly, my fiance is a wonderful human being, and she is still out on leave, so she has been really taking a lot of the mantle, and she's allowing me to get like a solid 4 or 5 hours a night, which is, for a new parent, is a miraculous amount of sleep. So I am extraordinarily grateful to her, and so it's, for me, it hasn't been, it's been rough, but it hasn't been, she's really taken one for the team, and Liberty Ballers crowd really owes her one.
Well, you know what, Paul, it'll get easier with time, much like most other things, right? So you just have to wait it out and be patient and survive on those four-hour nights. But what a good way to
start. He'll turn 18 eventually.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And then he's going to start hating you, right? It's a circle of life. That's what it is. But good way to wake up this morning. Ben Simmons, some news coming down the pipe. It's like, who doesn't want to talk about Ben Simmons at this point? Not like we've been doing that basically since last June. Anyways, the Athletic, Shams Charania. Also, Sam Emick, who's been on our Gastroenteritis Booze podcast a couple times with Steve, Dan, and Emily there, wrote about this in The Athletic, basically saying that Daryl Morey, completely willing to wait this out to try and get a bigger target, specifically James Harden, in the offseason. Paul, what did you make of this when you were reading this story? Because the way I'm looking at it, and I'll kind of jump into my thoughts a little bit later on, but Paul, when you're looking at this, is this surprising to you to see that? Because we're less than, you know, just over now, actually, 2 weeks away from the deadline. And all the hope was, hey, they're going to finally get this thing done, flush it, move on, and kind of get on with the season and know what's going to be happening as they get to the stretch drive. So where were you? Where are you at when you were hearing that it's going to be, you know, might go big game hunting in the offseason and wait for James Harden?
I'm definitely not surprised from what I've been told since the summertime. This, you know, from the people with, you know, understanding of how the Sixers are kind of operating along with this. Like, Daryl Morey even said it on Media Day. Like, they never wanted to trade Ben Simmons. That was not their intention. They never had that plan. They wanted to run it back with what they had, with a couple of additions, and see what they could do. And I think that was a fair way to look at it, because they are, you know, Ben Simmons shooting 60% from the free throw line, which he has shot throughout his career. They're that away from being in the Eastern Conference Finals and, you know, maybe having a shot against the Bucks. Who knows? You know, you never know what happens once you get beyond that point. But the point being, they thought they had a team that could compete for a title with Ben Simmons returning. They believed that. They truly believed that was their best chance. That was their best odds, was that. It was when Ben Simmons' camp wanted the trade that they started exploring options. They didn't like the options. So then at that point, that's when Rich Paul and Ben Simmons and the Clutch camp took the request for a trade public. And then that's when things kind of started to really deteriorate for both sides, really. I mean, I think that's something that Morey even has said. He said it on when he was on 97.5 The Fanatic the other day. He said basically that everyone needs to look at themselves in the mirror, because it's clear. I think, Jazz, you know, we have, like you already mentioned, we have really just beaten the hell out of this thing. And I think there is a fair amount of blame to go around, for sure. Not everybody has handled this thing great, but moving on from that, I would say that I'm not the least bit surprised that this is their stance. They've wanted a star player. They've wanted a top 30 talent all along. I was surprised, going back to that radio interview that Morey did, that he conceded that, you know what, maybe we don't need a top 30 guy because of how otherworldly Joel Embiid has been. Perhaps we could go with a top 40 guy who's a really great fit. So that was surprising. Today's report's not surprising. The Harden stuff, it's dubious to me because on a couple different fronts. One, there's no way that Morey knows for sure. Like, he might have an idea that, maybe I can sneak in here. Maybe James will want to come here and play under me again and yada, yada. And, he, you know, really, you can really sell him on the idea of playing with Embiid and all that. And that's part of the equation that maybe he does understand that. But even then, that's still a really big thing that you to bank on. And I thought it was important. Like, clearly the headline was James Harden, but Shams did mention that keeping Ben Simmons also allows him to possibly be in the hunt if Damian Lillard is available this offseason, if things change there, if Jaylen Brown becomes available in Boston, depending how that season unfurls. Even Bradley Beal would also have to be a sign and trade situation that's a little sticky, and I don't quite see the realistic nature of a Bradley Beal sign and trade this offseason either, because Bradley Beal will be leaving some money on the table. It's a whole complicated thing that we've kind of touched on the website here and there. But yeah, it's just, I get, and then I think the other part of it too that we have to like not rule out, Jazz, it is January 24th. There are still, you know, I'm not good at math, however many days until February 10th. This could be posturing. This could be Daryl Morey's way of saying, hey, Sacramento, you know, we kind of like the idea of Halliburton, Hield, and picks, but we need more. We need more picks, whatever. And your offer isn't good enough. And if it doesn't come up, we're going to keep him past the deadline. We're going to look, we're going to go big game hunting again this offseason. Now, to me, and I've seen people point this out, and I think it's fair, does pulling the trigger on a deal for Halliburton, Hield, and multiple picks, that doesn't, you're not out of the James Harden sweepstakes. You're certainly not out of the Dame Lillard sweepstakes. So, there's a lot here. It's a lot to unpack. For me, to simply answer your question, no, I was not surprised that that is the stance, because I think that has been the stance all along. So I think it would take a really massive offer to get the Sixers off of that stance.
See, Paul, here's my thing too. And you mentioned that because Shams and Sam Amick wrote about this in the morning piece, that the Sixers have asked for Tyrese Halliburton, multiple first round picks from the Kings. They also asked for a package around John Collins and multiple picks from the Hawks to go along with Tobias Harris going back in a deal, which obviously the Sixers would need to, even if they want to get Harden. They're going to have to clear some money up in the offseason. But see, like I think that kills two birds with one stone, right? Because you have Joel Embiid, who's playing all world MVP type, you know, level over the last, especially over the last, you know, maybe 6 weeks here, and, you know, scored 30 points in 13 of the last 14 games. You're looking at what he's doing and basically putting the team on his back. And leading the Sixers however far they're going to go. But you also are able to add, okay, Tyrese Halliburton might not move the needle in terms of being a wow, that this guy is, you know, a top 30, 25 guy, but he's young. He's a playmaker. He can shoot the rock. These are all things that the Sixers need. They're obvious, you know, glaring holes on the roster. And you're getting those future first round picks, like you mentioned, that you could revisit in the summertime. Hey, Brooklyn, you know what? Let's, you know, would you like a deal for Halliburton, a boatload of picks and Ben Simmons and whatever, figure that out at that time. And that enables the Sixers to still try and at least not just compete, because they're going to try and compete for a championship anyways, but at the very least, Paul, they're going to be trying to at least improve the team, because they're not getting anything out of Ben Simmons right now. So if you're bringing in a guy like Halliburton and some first round picks or John Collins, again, it boosts your chances, maybe not by a lot this season, but certainly improves the roster going into the playoffs, and then you could revisit in the summertime if things don't go well. But my thing here is too, with reading about Daryl Morey wanting to wait for James Harden, and Shams mentioned this and Sam Amick in the piece, is that, you know, they gave up Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, a couple of first round picks. They thought that deal was done, didn't go through. Obviously there could be some personal animosity between Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, and Daryl Morey, just because of how things might have ended there. But you're looking at this now, we're relying on Brooklyn to lose, let's say, in the playoffs. You're relying on things to go bad for the Nets in you know, if Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who's out injured right now, and James Harden aren't able to make it at least to a final. Like, and I think there's too many unknown variables. Joel Embiid's turning 28, basically 2 months from now. So when you're looking at what he's doing, how would you want to play this if you were Daryl Morey? Is it more important to wait for the big name like Harden, like Dame Lillard, like Bradley Beal, who you mentioned might be harder to get come time for the offseason? Or do you think it's important to, hey, because I look around the NBA landscape, remember what, 5-6 weeks ago, the Warriors were the talk of the town. Like, this team is unreal. They're unbeatable. They've fallen on hard times. Phoenix now looks like it's the best team in the West. The Memphis Grizzlies had that, you know, remarkable run. They played their way in it. But even in the East, it's like, okay, I like Miami. I think they're defensively obviously a very good team, and they got a ton of dogs on that roster. I think they're beatable in a 7-game series. Who knows what's going to happen with Brooklyn? Kyrie Irving, if he's not able to play because of his vaccination status, what does that do for Brooklyn? And then what? You got the Bulls? You know, I mean, again, good story, fun story. I don't think they're a legit championship contender. And, of course, the Milwaukee Bucks. So I don't think it's worth punting a season of Joel Embiid, not trying to at least, maybe not maximize by getting a superstar, but at least trying to bring in another player to help him out this offseason. So going back to my long-winded question here that took me about four hours to get out, but what I'm asking you is, if you were Daryl Morey, how would you want to play this? And what do you think should be at the top of the Sixers list going into now, the, you know, the final 30, 40 games of the season?
without knowing for sure what the offers look like, as far as if it's Tyrese Halliburton, Buddy Hield, and X, and not really, you know what I mean? Without knowing the full structure, it's hard to comment fully, but I'll put it like this. If, first of all, I think Morey is playing it right by, one, putting out there that he's willing to wait, right? Because that's the smart leverage play. Don't say, now we're going to try it. Like, we're going to do it. It's going to happen. Like, because that doesn't help you at all. But doing this doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt your leverage at all to just say, like, nah, we'll keep him past the trade deadline. Because then, again, like I said off the top, like, that's telling the Sacramentos and the Minnesotas and, you know, Charlotte, who apparently entered the fray as well. That's telling all these teams, give me your best offer, like, up it. Like, we need more. So from that standpoint, I think Morey has handled it well in that regard. Like, I don't think there has not been a time where there was an offer on the table that the Sixers got where it's like, you know what? I think Morey missed out. I really think he could have, like, the idea of like Malcolm Brogdon in a first, I think, is like one thing that was talked about. I was told that was something, like, Malcolm Brogdon was a guy that was, before he signed his extension, offered by the Pacers for Simmons. If you look at that now compared to what some of these other offers are, when you're looking at like the Kings and Halliburton and Hield and picks, like, that's a significantly better offer than, you know, Malcolm Brogdon and a first, at least to me. That's a much better offer. So I think in that respect, Morey has played it right. Now, if he holds Ben Simmons beyond the trade deadline, he's going to be open to a lot of criticism. And I think it's fair if then you go to the offseason and then you don't land that big fish and it kind of doesn't go your way. So he is really opening himself. Not that he cares, but he's definitely opening himself up for a lot of criticism if he carries this over beyond the deadline. You mentioned some good points about the idea of, you know, Joel Embiid is playing at an absolute MVP level, I think, which each passing game, I feel like he is pushing himself more and more up that ladder. He's been incredible since he returned from COVID. He's been one of, if not the best, two-way player on the planet. So when you factor that, and Daryl Morey did concede that is a factor. The fact that he is playing so great, that is something that has to be factored into the calculus here. So, yeah, I think, you know, that Kings offer, if that's real, if that report is real, that it was, I think the one, Keith Pompey reported it for the Inquirer. He said one of the things was Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, and then in return, Tyrese Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and two first-round picks. Now, I'm not sure the validity of that, but if that were the trade that was out there, yes, I 100% would do that, Jazz, because you're accomplishing so many things. You're getting a guy in Halliburton, as you said, not a top 30, not a top 40 guy right now, but it's not a bad or a disingenuous argument to make that he could be that, because I think he's a pretty darn good player, and I think he does have some all-star potential. I really believe that. Like you said, handles the ball well, excellent passer, can create off the dribble, really good using a ball screen, over 40% from three. You could see him and Tyrese Maxey feeding off each other pretty well as a backcourt tandem for the future. You could see a partnership with him and Joel Embiid really working out. Whether he's starting, whether he's come off of the bench and then eventually turns into the starting caliber player, like, you don't have to strain yourself to see that he could be that guy. And you look at Hield and Barnes are two guys that absolutely help them big time right now offensively. Two really gifted offensive players that would make this team better. To your point, better than everyone in the East? I don't know. But as you mentioned, the East is not solidified. You mentioned all the issues these teams have, and it is fairly open. If Joel Embiid keeps playing at this level and you add some things around him, I don't think it's crazy to consider them a team that could come out of the Eastern Conference and contend for a title. And then, I mean, the idea of getting off of Tobias Harris's contract, that's a really attractive thing to me. If that's something that's actually out there, I think that makes this deal exponentially more attractive to me, because with all due respect to Tobias Harris, who I still think is a good basketball player, he is paid at a near max level, and he does not give you near max production. So to get, and he's going to be making almost $40 million 2 years from now. So when you see that number, that makes sense to me that that would be a really attractive thing to get off of that deal. So it would hurt in that equation to lose a Matisse Thybulle, and their defense with that trade would suffer, but their offense would be so much better, and they'd still have Joel Embiid. You have a guy, Charlie Brown Jr., by the way, who is playing his ass off, who looks great on the defensive end of the floor and is doing some of the listen, don't get me wrong. Matisse Thybulle is a second All-NBA defender. He is a elite, elite defender, but Charlie Brown has been filling in some of those gaps with him out. So to kind of roundabout way, ask your question, like if I'm Morey, if that kind of deal is out there, I'm taking it because it helps you on all those levels. But at the same time, I think putting out the front that you might do it. And I don't think it's a, just a front. I think he would do it if that's the case. But I think that from a leverage standpoint, it makes sense to put that stance out there.
Yeah, it was funny timing too. I mean, you know what? For me here, like the West Coast, waking up Monday morning, I'm like, I'm reading this, you know, a piece coming out. I'm like, obviously, this was done by design. He's talked to some sources within the team, figured out what they, you know, what message they wanted to put out. I'm not saying it was Daryl Morey specifically; it might have been another staffer or whatever it is, whoever Shams' source is. But looking at this from that perspective, because I'm with you, I'm like, again, as constructed right now, are the Sixers a second round team? I think so. I think Joel Embiid can also maybe win three or potentially four games by himself in the second round, depending on who the opponent is. Is that going to work all the way through the playoffs? No, the Sixers just don't have enough, especially as you mentioned, on the offensive end, I think, to compete with the big boys if they're fully healthy. If Milwaukee has Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, obviously Giannis in the lineup, they kind of figure things out. They get Lopez back. That's a different team. And you're looking at what Brooklyn is like with all three guys. And again, we don't know how that's going to play out. And I would still put the Sixers a notch below those squads. But like you mentioned, if you're getting a guy like Tyrese Halliburton, you're getting potentially a Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes and maybe some picks in there as well. Again, you're giving yourself some flexibility in the offseason that, okay, this didn't work out. We completely crapped the bed in the playoffs. Let's look to move on. We got at least some extra picks from Sacramento, easily the worst organization maybe in all of professional sports, not even just the NBA. So you're banking on those picks being pretty damn good at some point down the line.
A Kings draft pick is always a sound investment. Yes.
It's like gold. Yeah, yeah. It's like gold at this point. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say like Bitcoin, but that stuff's crashing like crazy. So we're not going to get into that. But you're looking at how the Sixers could play this. And let's get into Joel Embiid too. I mean, you look at the numbers he's put up, you know, average better than 30 points throughout basically the entire month of January, the leading scorer in the NBA since roughly December the 16th, just killing it in every single way. He had 38 points and 12 boards against the Spurs yesterday to win that game. When you're looking at where his game has grown the most, especially over the last couple of seasons, Paul, where do you think that Joel has not only sharpened up and gotten like almost perfected, like his mid-range jumper and that part of his game, but where do you think that he's grown the most overall as a player that he's been at this MVP level basically for two seasons now?
Yeah, I mean, the list is way longer than we have time for because it's so many things that he has improved on. But I would say, to kind of simplify it, the two biggest things for me are the refocus on his health and his body and keeping in shape. Last offseason hired a world-class dietitian. And I think that shows up in so many ways, whether it's him hustling down one end of the floor to get really deep position, him posting up, getting doubled, passing it out, then repositioning. We've seen him roll a few times this year in the pick and roll, which he never has done in the past. He hasn't liked to do it, but I think because he's in better shape and because he could do it harder and faster, it's you saw one against the Spurs on Sunday night with Tyrese Maxey where he got a pretty easy bucket out of it. All those little things. The shot, I mean, that he's got legs, right? He's got his legs underneath him. And then I think maybe most importantly from that physical standpoint, that conditioning standpoint, fourth quarters. He's been so good in fourth quarters this year where that has not been the case in the past. Even going back, and he has said this, in that Atlanta series, he was not necessarily very good late in those games. Capella had that quote that really got circulated around, and there was like a hint of truth to that where he wasn't, like he was so good early in games, and then he kind of faded because he just didn't have, granted, he was also dealing with a torn meniscus in the playoffs, so I definitely need to include that. But in general, I think that conditioning, that physical shape has allowed him to be so good in clutch situations. But I think even bigger than that is the mental portion of the game. He has been so good dissecting double teams, learning where, like, he's putting, like, he's basically playing chess out there and telling guys where to go. Like, there was a play, our Jackson Frank tweeted it out last night. He diagrammed it where he tells Charlie Brown to get out of the corner and Furkan to go in the other corner. And then it leads to Furkan getting a wide open. Like, he told them to do it. And then he's like, he is just a step ahead of everything it seems like defenses are doing to him. Whereas in the past, they, you know, a team like Toronto had really flustered him with the way they doubled him and the way they send people. That doesn't affect him nearly as much as it once did. He's gotten so good at finding cutters, finding 3-point shooters. It's just, and then not only finding them, Jazz, but organizing them, telling them where to go. Like, he's running the offense. He's basically like a giant point guard out there. I don't know if he saw some of Jokic's games last year and thought, like, you know what? I have the skill and talent. I can do that too. Why not? Like, let me incorporate that. Obviously, Ben Simmons not being there has almost kind of pushed him to do it, but he's been good at it. Like, he's really excelled. So, like, no matter what happens with Ben Simmons, if they get another point guard in the fold, this is a new thing that he has unlocked. This portion of his game where he has become a playmaker and just really seen the floor so well. And it's that's a big reason why it's not only helped him. Like, he's averaging career high in assists, career low in turnovers, but I think it's also helped him from a scoring standpoint. And then the last thing I would say is patience. Like, because of that cerebral nature that he's played the half court game in, because of that, he has had so much more patience. He has let the game slow down. He has let the game come to him. And because of that, he's not panicked and he's stronger with the ball. And it just made him so much more effective. And I just always think about the fact that he didn't start playing basketball until he was 16 years old. And I think now you're starting to see now, because he's a smart guy. Like, he is one of the smartest athletes I've ever been around. Like, he is just such a smart dude. And I think he is starting to figure out the game. And that's why at 28 years old, in the best shape of his life, he is having this MVP caliber season. And why I think we talk about his prime a lot. And like, oh, you don't want to waste Embiid's prime. Well, you don't want to waste it by going all in this season, because I think he is just entering his prime.
You still think he has got how many more years, do you think? I mean, again, you have to be worried about this from a health standpoint, given his history. Also, as a big man, we've seen, you know, big men typically once you get to 33, you know, 34, the game starts to deteriorate. So when you're looking at this, because I'm with you, I remember we were talking about this during training camp, is that, and Morey was saying, you know, I don't care if this goes 4 years and we're like, ha, 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 Daryl. I don't think that's really going to be the case. Speaking of which, next time you're at a media availability, maybe ask Joe for some tips from his world-class dietitian, because we could both use those as well. Probably help us out.
I wouldn't listen to any of them anyway.
Yeah. You're going to enjoy your cheesesteaks and I'm going to enjoy some burgers. So either way. But when you're looking at what, like, how good he has been, and again, you're looking at the long-term health of the franchise, and getting back to the Morey stuff is, you have this guy who's playing all world, you know, at this point. And I think when it comes down to the MVP race, we'll see where we're at maybe in April. And if the Sixers can maybe climb up the standings, that he's probably going to be in the top three at this point. I would venture to guess, right now, not a shoe-in to win it, given that some other guys are having great years too. But when you're looking at this, like, how long should Daryl Morey be planning for here? For 3 seasons, 4 seasons? Like, where do you stand on that?
See, you hit on the age, and I kind of think that's the age. I mean, 33 seems like, because of what I've already mentioned, he's in better shape at 28 than he probably was at 22, just because of the way he's taken care of himself and the attention he's given to that, because he's matured and he's become so mindful and he listens to his body more. I know that's like a thing that maybe when you're all of us, right? When we're younger, we just don't care. Like, we get hurt, we just, we're good. And we rub some dirt on it and go out. Like, no, like, he's been smart of like, all right, this pain feels a little bit funny. It doesn't feel quite like a normal, like, it feels more than a usual pain. Let me get this checked out. I think he's done more of that and he's listened to his body in that regard. Like, even the meniscus thing last year, like, he knew he felt he could play through it. You know what I mean? Like, he knew it. Like, he felt it in his body. Like, all right, this is small enough. It's giving me pain, but I can tolerate it. I can manage this. Whereas maybe if it was a little more severe, he would be able to all say to himself, you know what? This isn't worth it. I got to shut it down, come back next year. So I think that from that standpoint, I think that's part of the reason why I believe he is just entering his prime and why I think he can do this for another 5 years or so. I really believe And then the other thing is, I think his offensive game is going to age great. When you look at, I don't think he's going to get any less strong. I think he's going to, if anything, maybe get stronger. That mid-range game, we saw what Michael Jordan and what Kobe Bryant did late in their careers, where they just mid-ranged everyone to death and no one could stop them. They just hit fadeaway after fadeaway after fadeaway. Once they started losing their legs a little bit, that's what they did. That's how they adjusted. And they were still great into their mid-30s. I think defensively is where he will eventually start to take a step back, because part of what makes him so great on that end is the athleticism, is how good his feet are, is how, you know, how athletic he is. So I do think over those 5 years, his defense might gradually decline. But I think offensively, I think he's still going to be elite. Like I said, I think for 5 years, I really, truly believe that, barring some type of crazy injury, which he hasn't. That's the other thing to point out too, Jazz. I mean, it's the injury history is fair. It's out there. It's a reality. But look at the last like few seasons. He's avoided that catastrophic. You know what I mean? Again, I'm knocking on wood as hard as I can here. You know, the navicular bone was really the last, and that was his when he first got into the league. That was the last like catastrophic thing that kept him out a season. Like, we haven't seen that. You know, he had the meniscus his rookie season. He only played 31 games, but he bounced back in his second year and made it, you know, made an all-star team the next season. So I think from that standpoint, he is just handling himself so well physically, and that maturation, I think it's going to allow him to play into his, like I said, early to mid 30s, I think is totally realistic from him.
And at this rate, Ben Simmons might still be on the roster, not playing by the time he's there anyways. Right. So we don't really know how that's going to turn out.
Last
one for you, Paul, about the Sixers, you know, looking at the way things are shaping up in the East, currently sitting in sixth, 2.5 games behind Miami for the top spot in the conference, only two behind Brooklyn for the lead of the division. Of course, the Nets are without Kevin Durant. Also looking at Chicago, Lonzo Ball out with an injury, Alex Caruso out with an injury. Looks like, you know, the Bulls can start maybe falling down a little bit, and same thing with Brooklyn here. The Sixers do have the sixth remaining toughest schedule in the league, but 11-3 since Christmas, sitting at 27-19. Where do you think this team is going to end up in the standings ultimately going into the playoffs? Like, what seed do you think they'll be at?
I could see them being the 3 seed. I think I still in my mind believe that Milwaukee and the Nets are kind of the class of the conference. What you already touched on, I'm pretty much lock and step with you on that. I don't, especially now with the injuries, I can't imagine Chicago keeps up what they're doing. And I thought they were going to come back down to earth anyway. And now I think the injuries are only going to exacerbate that a bit. Miami's deep. And so I think that's going to help them a lot, and that they're going to win a lot of games, and it's going to help them kind of stay afloat in the standings and stay pretty high, because they do have a deep roster that did just get Bam Adebayo back. You know, they have a lot of really good pieces. I don't know that they're elite. I don't know that they're like, again, I still think it's Miami, or excuse me, it's Milwaukee, it's Brooklyn. And then it's from there, it's kind of, and then I would probably put like the Sixers and the Heat kind of in that next tier. But what I would say, and I love Jimmy Butler. He is a great player. I loved covering him when he was here. He is an excellent, excellent player. He's not on that Joel Embiid level, right? He's not there. Neither is Bam Adebayo. They are both all-star players. They are both great players. They are not in that Joel Embiid category. So I think you have kind of a conflict there with those two teams, where you have a Miami Heat team that has a lot of very good players, whereas you have the Sixers who have an alien of a player and then a bunch of okay players, I guess, is like the best, with all due respect to a lot of the players on this roster. So it's an interesting dichotomy between those teams. And that's why I think they're kind of even. Like, I could see either one of those being the 3 or the 4. Like, really, I think the cream will rise, and I think it'll be Milwaukee or Brooklyn 1 and 2, and then Sixers and Heat 3 or 4. But then again, you know, Brooklyn's definitely a wild card. When you look at Kyrie's situation, you look at KD's injury history. I still love James Harden. I still think he's a hell of a player, but I don't think, I think it's clear he's down a little bit from where he's been in his past. He's not up to the level he's been at in recent years physically, but he's still a great player. But I just think their situation's so iffy. I just don't know what they are. So, I mean, I could even see them kind of falling down in the Sixers and Heat, perhaps sneaking ahead of them. So for me, I don't see them being any worse than the 4 seed going into the playoffs. And I think they could potentially be higher than that. just right now. Without making any moves,
are we not respecting the Cavs enough? Because I love their story. You know what I mean. You got Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, obviously, Jared Allen playing good. I wouldn't be afraid of playing the Cavs in the playoffs as of right now, just given their lack of experience at being, you know, at least a middling contender at some point in the Eastern Conference. I just still think they're one of the best five or six teams, but. Like, are we not giving them enough respect? Is that on us right now that they're going to play the Sixers in the first round and then beat them in seven or something? So somebody's going to come back and watch this episode and tell us that how dumb we are that we're not talking about the Cavs in the East.
No, I think the Cavs are getting their appropriate due. I think what you mentioned is the issue. I think they're young. They kind of don't have, like, a guy like Darius Garland has been outstanding. I think he's probably an all-star this year and probably should be. You mentioned Mobley he's rookie of the year and he's been spectacular. He is a lot of fun. He is going to be a star. Like, I think just with him and Garland alone, just those two guys, their future is so ridiculously bright. You mentioned Allen, who's having a hell of a year, who you could argue is also maybe in that all-star conversation. Okoro is a guy I love as a wing defender, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. I think they're probably at least a year away, I would think. I mean, who knows? I mean, listen, the Sixers are a team, you know, Ben Simmons' rookie year, they took the league by storm with him and Embiid in his second year, Ben Simmons in his first year, and they worked their way up to the third seed. It was really impressive. But I also think that was more of a result of maybe the teams ahead of them not being that experience that great. So I just think I don't even think it's necessarily that the Cavs are not good enough, or I just think it's that the teams in front of them are really good and really experienced. Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami, the Sixers. I mean, those are all four teams that have not only are good and talented, but they have playoff pedigree. They've been in this situation before. And the Cavs aren't quite there yet. And you're right, they might. Listen, if they're a five seed and the Sixers are a four, that's not going to be a cakewalk. That's going to be a really difficult series. The Sixers are really going to have their hands full to beat that Cavs team. But I would think that ultimately, best of seven series, the Sixers would beat the Cavs. But I think it would be invaluable for the Cavs to get that experience against a team like the Sixers. So I think the Cavs are appropriate. I think they're a hell of a team. I think they deserve respect. But I think, again, if they are the fifth best team in this conference, I think at best.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like I said, I think maybe next year or 2 years from now when LeBron James signs back with Cleveland because all of a sudden they're sick again and maybe tries to chase a championship. But I'm with
you. They have maneuverability too. That's the other thing. Yeah. It's like I think for the future, I think you know, they're going to have more flexibility once they get off Kevin Love's deal. I mean, Colin Sexton is probably. I mean, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with him. I personally think that he doesn't really fit quite with their like with what they have going on. I think they're better building, or like I mentioned, around Garland and Mobley, but we'll see. I think they're still, like you said, at least a year or two away.
Well, Paul, let's wrap up on this. NFL weekend, crazy, like the best playoff weekend I can ever remember. And you had four games that were four walk-offs. What was your favorite of all of them? Because I was watching that, the Rams Bucks game. I'm like, okay, they're seriously going to lose this. And obviously Matthew Stafford hits Cooper Kupp down the middle. What the hell was Tampa Bay doing on that? Where you're leaving Cooper Kupp on busted coverage running down the middle. It was an ugly game, but that fourth quarter. And then obviously the Buffalo KC game. I mean, what a crazy, crazy ending. What were your thoughts on the four games that we saw over the weekend?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I have to thank the Sixers for ending Sunday night's game in an early fashion so that I could tune into the Kansas City Buffalo game with 3 minutes left, which worked out quite
perfect timing. Yeah.
I mean, that was the greatest ending I think I've ever seen in a football game in my entire life. It was incredible. Those two quarterbacks, they are the future of this league. Like, that is, people have said, and I agree, that's like Brady Manning 2.0. And then that's not even including, you know, Burrow and a guy like Justin Herbert, who unfortunately didn't make the playoffs, like those guys coming right behind them. So like the future of the quarterback position is so exciting in the NFL. So I love that. That's one of my biggest takeaways, especially when you consider kind of this almost like a passing of the torch with Brady and Rodgers both going down. I have to admit that I enjoyed Aaron Rodgers losing. Take from that what you will. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. But my the one I probably enjoyed the most, though, and I'm also a big Joe Burrow, like an enormous Joe Burrow guy. So I love that. I loved him going into Tennessee and doing enough, getting his ass kicked throughout the game. I can't. What do you take, like nine sacks?
Yeah, nine sacks. Yeah, yeah.
Just got beat up all day, and for him to have enough to just win them that game, I love him. I love his guts. I think he's great. But Matt Stafford's a guy who I've always liked. I always thought he got such a bad rap for being in Detroit and people kind of questioning him and how good he actually is because, he couldn't win in Detroit. Nobody can freaking win in Detroit. They suck. Like, you're kidding me? Like, it's a terrible organization. It was terrible before Matt Stafford got there. It's terrible still after he's gone. So to see him have that vindication and have that moment, you know what I mean? Like, if they would have won 27-10 or something, it would probably still be the same narrative. It would be like, Matt Stafford hasn't really done it in a big game. But the fact that he got to make that throw to Cup, I thought that was like, it was such vindication for him. And also, man, Sean McVay really tried to lose that game. He tried to lose so hard. And it was because, he didn't trust Stafford. And I think that throw showed you, like, no, coach, like, trust your damn quarterback because he can do it. He can get the damn job done.
Well, I hope they don't trust him too much because I'm a Niners fan, so I'm hoping that he plays like crap on Sunday in the championship game. Because it was funny, we were talking a bit before we started rolling here, like going into that Green Bay game, I'm like, whatever, man. You know what I mean? I money lined the Niners. I'm like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, if they win this game, great. If they lose, oh well, they're supposed to lose anyways. And then as that game went on, weirdly as a fan, I was like, they're gonna win. Like, even when they couldn't score, and then you had the big block punt by Jordan Willis. And then Robbie Gould's walk-off field goal. It was like, I was like, cool, I knew this was going to happen. Now, going into what's the Sunday game, the 49ers have killed the Rams. It's like a weird thing in the NFC West that the Seahawks have the Niners number, and then the Niners have had the Rams number. So I don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. The Rams could come out and score 34 points and annihilate the 49ers because Jimmy Garoppolo throws for 97 yards and two picks. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens too, to be honest with you. But I would almost have rather had the Niners play the Bucks simply because you're going to be able to beat a team like the Rams seven times in a row, three times in a year. I know their stats show that, you know, recently it hasn't been as easy, but overall teams have done pretty well trying to go for the third straight win against a team. But
Eagles fans know that pain all too well with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Trust me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember. I mean, even while you're looking back at the days, it was like the McNabb days and the thing, and you mentioned the quarterbacks. All the good young ones are in the AFC. So, you know, you're looking at the NFC, it's like, well, what's going to happen here? You know what I mean? We're going to have to wait till these great, you know, group of quarterbacks starts coming up. Otherwise, the AFC is going to be winning the Super Bowl year in and year out, like you mentioned, with guys like Allen, Mahomes, and Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. So that's something to keep an eye on. But
that's a great point. Like, Kyler Murray, like, who outside of Kyler Murray in the NFC is and like the young quarterback? I mean, you're like, yeah, this is exciting. Like, no, like, nobody in the NFC East has that guy. No one in the Central. Well, maybe Fields. Fields might be that guy. I like what I saw out of Fields a little bit.
Even with the Niners, Trey Lance, we don't know.
Yeah, maybe Trey Lance.
And it's kind of interesting from a 49ers perspective. I'm like, okay, so if Jimmy wins, they win the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo, would be like Trent Dilfer or Brad Johnson winning it. But it's like, you just move on from the guy after this? You've been to two Super Bowls in 2 years?
The Ravens moved on from Trent Dilfer, didn't they? They got Elvis Gerbach right after that. Isn't that what happened back in the day?
Yeah, what a stupid move that was. Either way, yeah, Elvis Gerbach. Geez, former Niner as well. But, you know, okay, so we'll wrap up on this. Who do you have going to the Super Bowl? Who do you have winning the games this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Rams only because it's not just Stafford. I just think they're so complete. When you look at that front four, you know, their secondary has actually played really well. Jalen Ramsey's one of the best defensive backs in the game. And it just – and then – it's crazy that they got Odell Beckham Jr. for nothing.
Yeah.
And he's looked like every week he looks a little bit better than he did the week before. On top of that, playing the other side of Cooper Kupp, who's the best receiver in the game right now. You got Higbee, who's a really strong tight end. Even Van Jefferson's a really good third receiver. Yeah. Their offensive line is really held up. And they are just such a complete football team that I think they make it. And then the other side, it's so hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes. I guess I'm picking two favorites here, but like,
way to go on a limb, Paul. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Right. But that's what I see. Well, I'll say that. Here's what I'll say to make it a little bit dicey, a little bit more of a bolder pick. I think it's Kansas City, LA, and the Super Bowl, but I think LA wins it.
Wow. Okay, that's going to be interesting because I'm going to go with I would be remiss if I didn't take the Niners. I think the Niners are going to win a close one again. They've done it for the last 3 weeks, basically, if you include that Week 18 win over the Rams in L.A. But
it'll be a home Rams game, right?
No, it's going to be. It will be. I mean, did you see the stupidity of the Rams, like saying that they're only limiting their geographic, like the ticket sales to people who are located inside? Well, either way, that's not going to work because it's going to be a majority of all of their. I don't think it's like the Rams are what, the second favorite football team in LA, maybe the third behind USC and the Raiders, maybe. I don't know. But honestly, I think the Chiefs are going to win pretty handily. And that's no disrespect to the Bengals, but I'll have a Chiefs-Niners rematch from a couple of years ago. And, of course, being a 49ers fan, they'll be up by 10 again in the fourth quarter, and Patrick Mahomes will score 3 touchdowns, and they're going to lose. So, I mean, but that's what we'll go with on there. Let's wrap things up right here for this episode. Paul, anything going on coming down the pipeline this week for you? I know you got the Coming In for a Landing podcast on Wednesday. What can people look forward to on your end and for our Liberty Baller site, where we have a ton of great writers as well?
Right. Yeah. So we did touch on today, Dave Early, who's been really all over all this Simmons stuff. He's done such an excellent job for us, kind of taking those reports that we keep getting and putting it into a proper context and telling you what's real and what's not and what's possible, what's not possible. And I think he's done a really good job. So that's up on the site right now. One of the things that Shams mentioned was the Hornets being a team that has apparently entered the fray. So one, every team that enters the fray is better for Daryl Morey. Two, I'm going to write something maybe exploring a little bit more of, is Charlotte realistic? What can they get? Like, what does it kind of deal look like? And so I definitely want to get into that this week. And of course, we're going to be all over any other news that comes out for that. And then continuing to cover the MVP campaign of one Joel Hanzenbeed.
And let's make a deal, Paul, that after the trade deadline, we're just not going to talk about Ben Simmons until the season's over. Please.
I would be great with that person.
We'll wrap things up there. Don't forget, me and Paul are going to be doing this basically every Monday throughout the season, kind of giving you all the news going on in the Sixers in terms of the good and the bad, as well as the ugly. Also, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com.